What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's long been accused of looking like they kick with their shin pads. This week, we hear from one of the supporters who sat in at Reading on the Royals' dire situation. The scouting report returns. We'll preview the weekend's biggest games and plenty more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And here we are again, team, in our new-ish Wednesday time slot for the second week running. Hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're well. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by my two podcasting pals. Good morning, Adrian Clark.
Good morning.
Sam Parkin's back with us too. How you doing, Sam?
Yeah, I'm good, Matt. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Sam's just back. Well, not just back, but recently back from Bristol City, having watched a cup set last night. We'll hear more about that in the scouting report later. First, though, how about this? The guys at Quinbet, our sponsors, have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. All right, it's time for the opening gambit.
You say the likes of Dove wasn't good enough today. Is that something
not today? Not been good enough for about 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks. Why do you think he was dropped at the start? This is the point. I just told him in front of everyone. 6 months ago, that kid had a kick to go to the Premier League. Now he won't get a game in the National League. So is that me or him? It's a simple question. Because he's faster than everybody, and purely ability, but he gets ran every game. He never makes a tackle. And every time the ball comes to him, he looks like he kicks it with his shin pads.
Troy Deeney there with his rather unique brand of man management, for which he has since rode back and apologised. It made me wonder, though, what is the worst thing a manager has ever said about you or a teammate publicly? Sam, I'll kick us off here. My manager at Co-op, when I was a shelf stacker, age 16, said that I faced up like a drunkard. Facing up is when you bring all the products on the shelf to the front of the shelves to put them in a nice, neat line. He was heavily critical of my style, so I spent the whole 2 hours of the next shift doing it to try and please him. Did he like it? No, he didn't. Hardest £2.22 I've ever earned. What was yours, Sam? Anybody ever had a pop at you publicly post-match?
I think the reality of the last few hours of me scratching around in my brain tells you that it doesn't happen very often. I think it happens even less so in this day and age. So, no, it was more in jest, but I remember Laurie Sanchez, the day after one of the finest moments in my career, being on goals on Sunday after I'd scored the Wickham goal in the fourth round of the FA Cup, and telling the nation how rubbish I was in the air, which doesn't bode particularly well for a 6'2½ centre forward at the start of his career. So I didn't take too kindly to that. After I'd spent the morning.
Did you knock on the door? Did you go have a word?
I do remember nearly signing permanently for Wickham. Not a story I've told too often. And Sanch saying to me, I don't think he was a big fan of me, Sanch, but saying to me, you know, you've played 10 games and you've only scored that goal. And I said, well, I've only started 6 games and I've scored 3 goals for you. And I think he looked around and looked at like the planner and was like, oh, you played in that one? Yeah, and I scored in that one, Sanch. So there was a bit of that. I don't think he was ever that that hot on me. So it was a bit in jest, but there was that one. I remember there's nothing really else publicly, but I remember coming back from injury and Kevin Blackwell had only recently taken over at Luton. We were having a conversation just ahead of the season and he said, where do you see yourself? And I said, well, you know, there's some good kind of target men in the division. There's kind of John Stead and Rob Hulse. And there was a few at the time, you know, kind of goal scoring guys, good with their back to goal. And I said, I kind of feel I'm in that category. You know, they'd probably played in the Premier League by this stage. And, you know, I want to get there. And he went, yeah, you're not as good as them, basically, like that. And I think we went out and did an 11v11 and I was in the team. For the Saturday, I wasn't in the team after the 11v11. I went out and just like confidence capitulated, partly because I was coming back from injury as well and a bit rusty. But I never hit the heights under Blackwell after that.
Clarky, I can't imagine Arsene Wenger is the type to publicly chide his players. Troy Deeney channeling is inner John Sitton. Did anything similar ever happen to you?
Fortunately not, no. It is really rare. It is very, very unusual for a manager to resort to that. Yeah, I've been racking my brains and nothing really. The closest I had to sort of publicly name and shame was on loan at Carlisle. Martin Wilkinson was the manager who signed me, but then he sort of stepped back and the coach stepped up, Neil Cooper, to be the number one. And he had me on the bench at Cheltenham. We lost the game. He didn't didn't use any of the subs. And afterwards he was ranting and raving. And I said, well, you haven't even, you had players on the bench that you could have changed things. And then he sort of said, well, you, actually, I'm glad you've stuck your hand up. You're not good enough like that. You're not good enough. I don't believe you're good enough to change the game. And I had a right bite. I had a proper bite up. I did the whole put your caps on the table. I said, I was playing in the Premier League 3 years ago. Blah, blah, blah. I was good enough for it then. Good enough to play for you now, mate. So that was quite embarrassing in front of the lads, but I think they quite enjoyed my bite. The worst I've seen really is kind of in private, but within the confines of the dressing room. A manager, Pat Rice, who's a brilliant guy, lovely fella, but he could be quite brutal. And there was a lad called Joel, who was a good mate of mine back then. And he was having a really tough time. You know, it wasn't going well for him. And Pat Rice, his own manager, nicknamed him Ming. Ming the Merciless, basically. Saying he was minging. It was absolutely brutal. And like none of the lads could believe what was going on. And it just destroyed him. He never got given a contract and whatnot. And that sort of term stuck. So yeah, it's highly unusual. And I think Troy Deeney was bang out of order. And, you know, Sam will know this. It is the ultimate deflection tactic. To take the eyes off me, I'm going to lash out and throw someone else under the bus. And that's what he's done. And I can't think of an example where it's ever worked.
Nope,
that relationship, really. that relationship between Dabo and Dean is done, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't want to play for him again.
Yeah, you wouldn't have thought so. They're away at Gillingham on Saturday, so we'll see if he's in the team. Just for completeness, I did actually bump into, that manager still works at the same co-op, and I saw him last week and he was stacking the shelves, and it would have been very easy for me to criticise him, but I thought, no, I'm going to be the bigger man here. Let him go about his business. Right, that's the not-so-serious stuff out of the way. Next, we're going to talk about Reading. The big story of the week then, the issues blighting Reading. Their owner, Dai Young, urged to sell the club by the EFL after he failed to meet financial deadlines to pay wages. And Saturday's game against Port Vale was abandoned after supporters staged a pitch invasion in protest at the ownership. I caught up with Jamie Butler, who was one of those Royal supporters who took to the pitch last weekend, to find out more. All right, well, first off, Jamie, give us a brief overview, if that's even possible, for anyone who isn't fully up to speed with the events that have led to Saturday's action, because it's been a long time getting to this point, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we could be here till the cows come home, really, talking about the trials and tribulations that we've had in the last few months and years, really. But I guess really why things have escalated so dramatically in recent weeks. To summarise, we're just an absolute shambles behind the scenes. We've got an owner who has drawn out the sales process, potential buyers for the club being put off by totally unrealistic valuations in place, and the owner's behaviour through the sales process. And then actually on the ground, the people behind the scenes are suffering now as well. So we've got employees that have been made redundant in and around Christmas, staff, so non-playing staff in particular, receiving salaries with delay and not in full prior to the Christmas break. And we've then had redundancies to the coaching staff.
So 16 points deducted in total, going all the way back to kind of 2021. But you mentioned the owner kind of holding up the sale. The big problem here is that nobody knows what his intention is.
That's correct. Although just in the last 20 minutes or so, the CEO has been on TalkSport. So he's put a statement out there. Standard stuff that you would expect somebody to say. I think clearly the fans who protested on Saturday, we realised that 3 days after the event, the chief executive suddenly popping up out of thin air. You know, we're getting to this guy. We're getting to, notice taken of us. The statement he said just asked for patience and said that the sales process is ongoing and that our actions will cause delays, etc., which I frankly believe to be a load of nonsense. So, we've heard his voice. We know what the CEO's voice sounds like. But otherwise, communication has been non-existent.
And how are you feeling about the EFL's role in this? Because obviously they ratified the takeover in the first place, and they've been sort of freely deducting points and levying fines. They said on Monday, urged Mr. Young to sell the club for the sake of staff, supporters, local community, etc. I mean, I guess on one hand, you want to see them take stronger action, but they did try to do that, didn't they, by disqualifying him as a director only for an independent commission to overturn that. So is there realistically more that they can do, you think?
I think we empathise with the EFL because we recognise that they're in a difficult position as well. If we look at the rhetoric of the statements that they release, it's quite clear that they are fed up of dealing with him and that they would want to have the power to get rid of him. We believe, as a group of Reading fans, that ultimately, if the EFL have the authority to put him in place in the first place, they should have that same authority to remove, almost like somebody being a licensed practitioner, a custodian of a football club. And actually, whilst it's great that the world's eyes are on Reading right now, there's Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, Southend, various other clubs who have their own struggles. So this just demonstrates that this is a much bigger problem than Reading itself, and really drives forward that need for overall fresh thinking and new legislation to be brought in to protect, you know, what is one of we're the seventh longest, eldest professional club in England.
Saturday's action was obviously effective, but it's not a long-term strategy you want to be employing, presumably.
Absolutely. And, this isn't a knee-jerk reaction. This is, as we've spoken around, off the back of months and years of mismanagement and malaise behind the scenes. So it just goes to show how far we've had to be pushed to take the action that we ultimately had to take. Clearly, though, that's not sustainable. We can't be running on a pitch every game. But there is further plans to provide further targeting to Mr. Dye in particular. That's not a physical threat, but it's different ways of targeting him and institutions that he is close to, with ultimately that overall goal of driving through change and getting the result that we want to protect the long-term status of our football club.
Were you impressed with the reaction of Ruben Selles after the game? I guess he's somebody you said working with one hand tied behind his back, but it would have been easy for him to kind of toe the party line, but he basically backed you, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to look at it through slightly different lenses. On the football pitch, I've got a lot of questions around what he's done this year, the systems that he's used, the personnel that he's deployed, but actually as a man and as a character, for everything else that goes and the baggage that goes behind the scenes, he stood up tremendously well and conducted himself very commendably. So yeah, hats off to him. The easy thing would have been to come out and lambast the fans, but ultimately, you know, him, the playing staff, the coaching staff, they're suffering as well. Overnight stay and accommodation to away games has been disrupted. We've got the caterers behind the scenes that we are so behind on payment for that they've removed catering personnel at the training ground. So we've got players eating microwave meals. So yes, he would have felt the inconvenience, and I'm sure the players would have felt the inconvenience of having one Saturday disrupted, but it's just a small part of the overall puzzle that is going on behind the scenes for us.
I know you appreciated the support that the Port Vale fans offered on Saturday, right? And that's kind of been reciprocated with Reading fans donating to the fund for a statue of John Rudge. That was really heartening to see in what's a dark period for Reading and for English football in general. It's not something we excel in generally, is it, as supporters, in terms of helping out other clubs, but that was a positive in the midst of so many negatives.
Definitely. The Port Vale fans, there were a few that weren't happy on Saturday, but by and large, they've been tremendous and a great source of support. So a lot of us at Reading really respect that. We physically can't reimburse people for lost travel costs, etc. But the least we can do to show the respect that we afford them after Saturday is to put our hands in our own pockets and help them. I think the last note that I saw was that a figure of around £5,000 had been donated post-Saturday. Whether that's all 100% from Reading fans or not, I'm not too sure. However, yeah, really proud when I look on that list of donations to see a lot of familiar names, and hats off to them.
All right, Jamie, we really appreciate your time today. Just before we go, tell people how they can keep up with Sell Before We Die across social media and how people can help out.
I think for me, it's about having that conversation, particularly post-Saturday. Lots of friends from all over the country and further afield who weren't even aware of the plight that we're experiencing. So if you see anything related to Reading, please share it on your socials. Make sure that you talk around it. We're quite fortunate that we took that action on a weekend where there was limited Premier League schedule as well, so slightly less Prem football to talk around. And then equally, Sell Before We Die, they're all over social platforms. So watch this space for some further development to come from the Reading fans' perspective.
Jamie Butler there. As he mentioned in the interview, Chief Executive Dion Pang said Dai Young is 100% willing to sell the club and asked for fans to be patient while a deal is finalised. Sam, you're the one with the most relevant experience here, having been part of that Luton side that was docked all those points. How are the Reading players feeling now? I guess the thing here is that it's January. A lot of them might be looking for an exit. It seems a lot of them might not have any choice. They're kind of being sold whether they want to go or not.
Yeah, a lot of similarities, I suppose. I mean, that same season that I just referenced with Kevin Blackwell, who was the manager initially, if memory serves me right. I remember the phone call from Kevin Blackwell ringing around the squad to say there was going to be the points deduction. I think it was the initial points deduction, maybe 10, maybe 15 points. Ultimately, what saw the team relegated from League One. And the funny thing is, and obviously it's not really been written about, it's not relevant, but the form of the team's been okay recently. I think they're 6 unbeaten. So tough for the manager. And the players have probably taken solace in the fact that the 11's actually okay. And they've got enough quality probably to be competitive for the remainder of the season. The problem being now, they're not going to be there. And I think when you're part of a squad and you see your best players being sold potentially, that quality diminishing, that can become problematic. And that's when you start thinking about your future and being a little bit selfish and your agenda. And we've already heard a little bit out of some of the players' camps. I think Robbie Savage spoke, didn't he, about his son, about the potential of moving on. And it's not going to be isolated, that there'll be a number of them that will be wanting to look after number one. Maybe it's slightly different for the guys that have come through the academy, if you've got that emotional attachment to the club. But I think that's problematic, absolutely, when the squad starts getting cut apart. And also, they'll just be fed up. I remember, and it was a little bit comical, not the situation, of course, at Luton. It was desperate. But players don't want to be having meetings about money and wages and administration. I mean, we were just so out of our depth. You know, I was 26 or something, and 20, maybe even younger. And it was a problem, obviously, for the young pros who weren't getting their wages. The more experienced guys probably understood the situation a little bit more. I just remember administrators, I know they're not at that stage now, but, you know, people of authority, different roles coming in and talking to us before and after training. And we were just like, we have no idea what is going on here. So when that focus goes away from the pitch, that focus can be clouded. So I think it's a problem. It's a problem right now. And yeah, hopefully they can galvanise on the pitch, because that will give the supporters something. But it's a desperate situation.
Adrian, Ruben Sellers has played this well, I think, hasn't it? We talk about Troy Deeney putting his foot in his mouth. Sellers, as Jamie mentioned, you know, saying after the game, well, it's their club. They're going to be Reading forever. They have the right to take whatever action they see fit. He's having his staff made redundant all around him. So his loyalty to Reading and the owner is clearly not as strong as it ought to be. And he's doing well to kind of deflect a bit of criticism from him, maybe, and where they are on the pitch. And he's probably realistic to know he's not going to be there much longer.
Yeah. No, I think he's doing all right. As Sam said, the form's been okay. He's not had a lot to work with. And yeah, he was diplomatic. He didn't turn on the fans, which is the right thing to do. I think, you know, everyone in football surely is sympathetic to Reading's plight. And actually, I think many, including myself, certainly back what they did. I mean, what they got to lose? You know, they feel like the club is disappearing before their very eyes, and it's a desperate measure. They'll take the hit if there's a points penalty. They just want a club. They want to force Dai Young out and force the EFL and the authorities to kick him out, basically. And hopefully that will happen, because it's a good club, Reading. And but no club is too good to go down. We've seen that. So, yeah, I say well done to the Reading fans for what they did at the weekend. They'll be prepared to take whatever punishment comes their way, because in the long run, they just want a club to support. Simple as that.
Yeah, well done, Reading fans. Well done, Port Vale fans, too, for backing them. We'll keep a close eye on what happens with Reading going forward. Now then, Sam, Mike Flynn, sacked by Swindon after 8 months in charge, follows a run of just 3 wins in 15 matches, 10 defeats in that spell. He only signed a new deal in November, didn't he? I mean, it felt, though, like the die was cast after they had that 7-goal concession at home to Aldershot in the Cup. There's always going to be a long way back after that.
Yeah, that wouldn't have helped. I've completely forgotten about that, to be honest. Listen, it's a squad that's lacking depth, absolutely, and a hammer blow, really, to... Feels like a reoccurring theme when we're talking about Swindon losing loan players, doesn't it? Or having their chances of success boosted by some really savvy signings in that department. But to lose Dan Kemp and Jake Young in the last few weeks has been tough to swallow. I mean, those two, I think... I had a little look yesterday, I haven't got it in front of me, but they've been involved in like 40-odd goals, either assisting or scoring those two. They've been phenomenal signings. So not to have the resources or the want to go and replace them adequately, I think that's really tough for the manager, first and foremost.
Would you say they were Flynn's... Were they Flynn's picks, by the way? Do you know if that's
don't
the case?
Don't know if they were Flynn's picks, but... Yeah. Yeah, obviously.
Good picks.
The reality was they weren't going to be able to keep hold of them probably the way they were performing. But to see in the early days of the window a few players, unproven players coming in, not of the same quality, I think is a valid point as to why the recent results have been poor. Defensively, incredibly short all season. I'm talking about going into the campaign without a adequate squad, without enough experience defensively, without enough good defenders, people who want to go and head the ball, who want to win individual duels. So there's the problems in terms of the squad. Yeah, he's not been great. I think he has to shoulder some of the blame for some of the results and maybe not being flexible enough with his tactics. But I think the biggest issue here is the churning managers, the lack of direction from above, and they've appointed, it seems like in the short term, Gavin Gunning, who's come from nowhere really. He's been involved with the loans, I think, this season. He's been an interim before at Swindon, and it was really good fun, if memory serves me right. He wants the team to attack and score goals, and they did do in those games. But if he's going to be front of house, if you like, until the summer, I think that's another body blow for the Swindon fans. But the reality is the problem isn't who the manager is at the moment. It's what's going on at board level. And until there's clarity there and until there's proper direction, they're going to keep changing the manager. That's not the biggest issue here.
Smacks to me, Clarkey, of an owner who has decided that they're not going up, they're not going down this season, and he doesn't want to put his hand in his pocket and pay for a manager. This is Clem Morfuni. So Gavin Gunning, as Sam says, who is the development phase loans manager. He's an interim charge, but it sounds like that interim period will last the whole season. This is what the owner said. I've confidence that Gavin can deliver a successful campaign for the 2023-24 season. This starts with Saturday's game against Tranmere. Doesn't sound like he's got anybody lined up to take
it doesn't, does it? It doesn't. He's got to sort the defence out, hasn't he? I think only Colchester conceded more goals than Swindon in League Two during Mike Flynn's spell in charge. So, you know, that's Sam's touched on it there. I think just too many young players, too much inexperience, not enough sort of grizzliness at the back. Injuries have obviously hurt them as well. But yeah, I think it's great having a philosophy and having a plan. And saying that, yeah, we want to develop young players and sell them on and, you know, improve them, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is you got to sort of, you can't back away from it every time results go wrong. And, you know, that's what happened, really. You know, I know it didn't work out with Jody Morris, but, you know, they didn't get a transfer window, did they? They were told to, you know, use all these young players. They kept losing. So instead of sort of persisting with it and maybe changing that policy or giving them more time, gets rid. And it's the same pattern over and over again. I think this is the fifth manager they're looking for, Clem Morfuni, who I remember was sort of carried through the streets of Swindon on arrival. I mean, he couldn't stop having his photo taken with every Tom, Dick and Harry. He was the hero. He was the messiah. But in reality, he hasn't really taken the club forward. I know it was in a bit of a mess prior, and maybe that was tidied up initially, but don't think he's been anywhere near as good as people thought he was going to be. Yeah, it's a real shame.
Yeah, you make some really good points, Clarkey. And if you think about the previous director of football, you know, all these signings were unproven young academy graduates with that philosophy in mind. And of course, Mike Flynn, I would say from the outside, is not that type of manager. He's going to want more experience, more grit, but a lot of these players remain. So unless you're giving a manager full control to be able to wheel and deal, to be able to mould the squad to the fashion that you want, it's never going to be a successful recipe. So I think that's a massive, massive problem. And hopefully the new manager will have, when it comes, whether it's in the summer, full control and the ability to change the squad.
Just a quick one. Mike Flynn, it feels like, obviously he did a brilliant job at Newport, didn't he? For quite a lengthy period. It feels like the moment he tried to play good football at Newport was the moment it all went wrong for him, because he had a plan, he had a way of playing, and it worked. And I remember him trying to change them to be more attractive. From that point onwards, whether it was there at Walsall and now at Swindon, it's just, it's weird how he's fallen off a cliff in terms of being able to get results, isn't it?
Yeah, he's in the Gareth Ainsworth vortex, I think. But again, with Swindon, we come back to talking about owners. And yeah, maybe it's the EFL that needs to tighten things up a little bit in that regard. All right, we're going to do previews of the big games coming up in the Football League later. Next, though, we'll do some scouting reports. All right, so if you don't know this feature, it's basically we pick two players that the chaps have had a close eye on over recent weeks and tell you a little bit more about them. Clarkey, I'm intrigued by your pick. This is a big name in the Championship in Jorginho Rutto, who had a difficult start. He's not a frequent goal scorer by any stretch of the imagination, but you did see him find the net in South Wales last weekend.
I did. Well, I've seen Leeds a few times in the flesh this season, and I love watching Rutter play. He is still only 21. I think people forget that. He was brought in from big money from the Bundesliga, and he did look overawed by it, really, in the Premier League last year. But goodness me, has he recovered. And he's one of my favourite players to watch in the Championship. I think the Championship, by the way, has got some brilliant dribblers, hasn't it? Some great ball carriers this season. I mean, think about it. Clark, Sunderland, Whittaker, Mavadidi, Somerville at Leeds, Chayir, as we should call him now, of course. I think Delap, I saw recently, Liam Delap, great ball carrier, Philogene. There's loads of them. And Rutter is among them. I just think he's so graceful when he's got the ball at his feet. And what I like about him most is the imagination. Whether he's playing as a striker or as a number 10, he finds unusual angles and he attacks at unusual angles as well. You'll often see him carrying the ball diagonally towards the goal. Rather than going straight at an opponent, he'll carry it diagonally and then look to slip a player in on a through ball. He's made the second highest number of through balls in the Championship, by the way. Striker, of course, by nature, Jorginho Rutter. So yeah, he's got 9 assists, 5 goals. Looking at some of the numbers, I mean, he's in the top 10 for shots, obviously, for key passes. Goal-creating actions, he's second in the Championship. Successful take-ons, which is, you know, going past a player, second in the Championship. He is the most fouled player in the division as well. And, yeah, I know on the pod before I compared him a little bit to Stan Collymore, and I kind of stand by that. But for me, he is the player that kind of glues Leeds' attack together, because they've got so much pace around him, so much sort of directness. It needs that bit of guile. It needs that clever player in the middle, either as a 10 or as a striker, to sort of piece it together. And I think he does it quite brilliantly. And I think if he's out of the team for whatever reason, then Leeds will suffer in the second half of the season. So yeah, keep your eye on him. I think, you know, the things he's doing at the age of 21 in the Championship, if he was British and he'd come through the ranks at Leeds United, this is a player that everyone would be talking about. Wow. Look at what this player is doing. He's only 21. But because he's come from big money from Germany, you know, it's sort of almost half expected. I think he's a real talent.
Giving you the platform to go full Daniel Farker from earlier in the season, Clarkey. You're there Sunday, aren't you, Leeds Preston?
Yes, yeah.
Who is your 9 and who is your 10? 3 to choose from: Bamford, Pirro, Rutter.
Yeah, it's a great shout, because Bamford was superb at the weekend. this movement. I mean, Cardiff was so bad. It was embarrassing, but I loved Bamford's movement, the form, the cleverness of him, but he is a bit slow. He's not the quickest.
But this weekend in isolation, right now, free from free, isn't he? 3-3.
For this weekend, I'm sticking with it. I wouldn't change the team. I just think you go with Bamford and Routier in behind. What I saw down in Wales, but I love Joel Pirro as well. And do you know what? I think the fact that you can put Routier up top and have Pirro in behind and then flip it around mid game if you want to. I mean, is a great sort of advantage, I think, to Farke. With Bamford, it's different. He's got to really be up top, hasn't he? So yeah, and I wouldn't be changing the Leeds United side. No chance. They were magnificent in the game against Cardiff.
All right, so that's Jorginho Routier. 36 million quid they paid for him. That's kind of hanging around his neck a little bit. So that's the case of the attack. Sam, you're going to make the case for the defence. This is a young man who you saw as recently as last night as we record. Tell us more.
Yeah, Cameron Pring at Bristol City. Left wing back last night. I thought he was the best player. I thought he was the best player on the pitch. I said as much during the commentary in the first half, I think. So I was pleased that it got announced over the PA system that someone at the Beeb had agreed with me. When I watch him, it's just Joe Bryan. Joe Bryan. I mean, it's the most obvious thing to say because he's a left back, left wing back from Bristol City, local lad. Incredible power, athleticism. That's the first thing. Just on Joe Bryan, I mean, I know he's still doing well at Millwall and had the time in the Premier League, but I thought he was going to really kick on. I don't know why he hasn't, because I still think he's got all the attributes when I see him. But there's loads of similarities about the way he gets up and down. I thought West Ham's right-hand side really didn't function last night. Soufal was one of the poorest players. He got replaced, actually, which is a bit of a rarity, seeing a fullback go off after about an hour. I think David Moyes was just like, yeah, too many terrible touches, get yourself off. It's him and Corne, I think, on that side. So Pring dealt with them really well first half, defended well, made one brilliant covering challenge, actually, a ball in from the left-hand side. So you can imagine Corne's coming around the far post and he just got in to make the intervention and got a little deflection to get the goal kick. Opposite end, attacked it well. Likewise, coming in off the left, the ball's coming in from the right, one that he headed in front of Mavropanos, I think. So he looks like he could probably contribute more assists and goals. Looking back over his career, he's not really contributed loads. I think he's a goal and two assists so far this season, but I think he just gives them lovely balance. He had eight loans prior to getting the run in the Bristol City first team a couple of years, 3 years. I think he's been a regular now, but great tenacity. Good on the ball, played one lovely pass last night late on for Harry Cornick, who's obviously a really willing runner in behind. He played a lovely ball into the channel for him. So, no, just very impressed. I would have maybe gone for Tommy Conway, but Clarkey stole my thunder about 18 months ago on him. But he was lively last night as well. I like him because they don't have a lot of pace, really, Bristol City. So his enthusiasm and his direct running is a big asset. And obviously Pring, I think, brings that from a deeper position, but he's obviously someone who's a good ball carrier and can get the team up the pitch. So I'll be keeping an eye on him. He signed a new 3-year deal in the summer, but I think he's someone that teams would look at. You know, there's a bit Leif Davis going on there. You know, can kind of occupy the whole left-hand side, do a bit of everything. And, incredibly impressive last night.
Yeah. 7 out of 10 every week, isn't he? That's what he is. He's a 7 out of 10 every week. If he could produce the assist rate of a Leif Davis, he gets the move. No question. He's a good player.
That is Cameron Pring then and Jorginho Routier, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. Weekend previews, Monday, famously not part of the weekend, but that's where we're going to start. Leicester versus Ipswich, the key one in the Championship. It's at the King Power, the top two. This is not really how you should start a preview for a game, Adrian, but I just wonder if there's a chance this might be a little bit defensive, given there's no pressure on Leicester to get a win, really, despite that defeat at Covent, and Ipswich should likely be happy with the point. Might we see both teams think more about stopping goals going in rather than scoring them?
I don't think that's really the mentality. if I'm honest. I think Leicester want to have the ball, control games and score goals. And Ipswich under McKenna, I don't think they want to be there sitting ducks, having to absorb pressure all game. I don't think that would really, you know, I don't think the back four would be too happy about that. I think, you know, they showed in the second half of the game during the Christmas period that they can cause Leicester problems, you know, by playing their football and playing through them, which they did on several occasions. So I hope you're wrong. I hope it's a better game than expected. And Maresca's not going to be on the touchline. He's got a ban and third yellow card. So it'd be interesting to see how that affects Leicester. We're also missing Fatawu, the winger, after that crazy tackle at the weekend. I mean, it's actually quite funny, isn't it, that he turned down Ghana and then and he could have gone to the whole AFCON and come back and not missed any more games than he's going to miss now. So, yeah, no, it's going to be a good game. Lots of different battlegrounds around the pitch. I think that James Justin against Wes Burns will be an interesting one. He had a little bit of a tough time against Sakamoto. Will Callum Doyle come in? I think that Burns is a real threat for Ipswich Town. Also, Chaplin in that hole. We saw what Callum O'Hare did to Leicester. He's very effective, played ever so well in the game. You know, Chaplin's not a dissimilar type of player. So can he affect things in that pocket? Because in reality, Leicester don't have anyone there. It's Winks is your deep playmaker, but he's not a there's no destroyer, is there, in that side? There's no man marker. It's really about what Leicester do with the ball and how they control things. So yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. For Ipswich, it's a blow that Sam Morsy is out, I think. So that'll give the Foxes a leg up. And for me, Leicester's pace might be the difference here. When I look at Ipswich, it's sort of lack of pace at the back that really hurts them. And I mean, Dewsbury Hall, who should have had a penalty at Portman Road, he's just so... Has there ever been a player more deceptively quick than Keenan Dewsbury Hall? Because for me, Sam, he looks like someone who can get around the pitch, but he doesn't look like a speedster. But then when he motors, goodness me, I mean, he just puts the turbo on, doesn't he?
Trying to think of the cliched player who's quicker with the ball than without it, but I can't place him at the moment. It'll come to me.
Yeah, Teddy Sheringham was the one who had it in his head, didn't he?
5 yards,
yeah.
First 5 yards,
yeah.
Did he?
Yeah,
but yeah, look, it's going to be a good game. I think Leicester have got to be careful on set pieces. They've had a bit of a problem defending set pieces this season. They've let in 9 set play goals, Leicester. They've only let in 12 goals in open play. So that's a problem. And as discussed, Leif Davis is possibly the best, certainly one of the best technicians in the division.
Ipswich, Sam, pretty good away from home. In fact, they've only been beaten twice on the road all season, but those are in big games. Away to West Brom and then that gubbing at Leeds just before Christmas. They didn't score in either of those matches. So something for Kieran McKenna to learn from those maybe going into this one.
Yeah, they didn't really turn up, did they? Yeah, West Brom are liable to do that, and Leeds are definitely in the conversation for the best attacking units in the division. So they'll have to put that to one side. They played well. They deserved the point. I thought they looked like there was a bit of a gulf early on at Portman Road between these two sides, but Ipswich did well to rally. I don't think there's any pressure really on Ipswich going here. I think for the first time, when you consider the problems at Leicester, I say problems very in hushed tones because there isn't much wrong, but I just mean they've got some players missing for the first time. A number of players. They're down to, I think, maybe just Tom Cannon for this game in attack, who's looked really good.
Vardy might be on the bench, I'm hearing, but
yeah, so we'll see. So I just think for the first time, you know, if they were to lose at home and it be cut to 4 points, I think every time you go out on the pitch, and especially in a big game in the Championship, the players will have a degree of anxiety and there's a little bit of pressure on you to perform. Of course there is, but no one expected Ipswich to be here. That's the reality of it. So I don't see this being, you know, them looking over their shoulders and desperately hoping they can maintain their form, otherwise they're going to get overtaken by Southampton. That is very liable to happen. I don't think that should concern anyone at Ipswich Town. They've done brilliantly. So no, I'm really looking forward to it. And just like Clarkie said, on the midfield, I'm actually thinking about putting myself forward to be like an opposition scout, because if Ipswich score from another outswinging corner or free kick into that little bit of space, the second 6-yard box, if they score another one, honestly, I'm going to pull my two hairs out, because I'm watching on the TV, and I know Leif Davis is going to pull that back for Chaplin to score that goal the other day, but nobody in red and white in Sunderland colours knew that. So hopefully Leicester, for their sake, will have learnt, because they love that one from corners, the old Anderton Sheringham from dead balls. They always look for it. And I think in open play, maybe that inverted fullback comes into the conversation here, Clarkie. They normally do it. So maybe Pereira or maybe Chowdhury, who I've seen play that role really well, to complement what Winks does, just to keep an eye on those two tens, because obviously you're going to worry about Broadhead as well. But no, I think it should be a really good game. And you know what? Just to caveat everything I've just said, I wouldn't be surprised if Leicester flexed their muscles and went, get back in your box, to have got a victory, just to reaffirm their strength.
All right. Well, if Southampton beat Swansea on Saturday, they will be second, so Ipswich would need something to get back into the automatic promotion places. We'll see. Lincoln versus Derby in League One. It's Derby's second Derby-ish of the week after that late win against Burton on Monday night. Let's start with Lincoln, though, Sam. I'm interested to see that they've appointed Chris Cohen, who is one of the greatest people in the world, me and Nick Miller would say, as their assistant. Director of football, Jez George, said, "When Michael Scubala was appointed, we agreed that we should take our time in finding the right person to go with him. And all along, we knew that was Chris."
Why don't they take their time then?
Yes, I mean, that's the obvious question, isn't it? But I guess the key question, Sam, is that this has got Michael Scubala's sign off, because otherwise that feels a bit problematic to me, that you bring in a coach long after you've appointed the manager. It must be on Scubala's say-so for it to work. Is that fair?
Yeah. Are you alluding to the fact that he's quite high profile and he's probably got aspirations to be a manager?
I think he's got aspirations to not have to move house again from having worked with him in the summer. And obviously he's not going to have to do that. He lives in Nottingham, so he can commute to Lincoln. So it's a nice one for him in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like a very affable fella, doesn't he? And he's had some good roles. He's been really important, I think, for Nathan Jones, and did a good job for Luton, held in high regard. I think that will strengthen them, having his knowledge and his experience, and probably at a good time as well, where they're trying to find a little bit of form, transitioning a little bit under the new manager. Obviously, the results have been really disappointing until that draw at Wickham, and I think they'll take real solace in that second half performance. The most interesting thing, obviously, for me sitting here is the two strikers that are now in tandem for them. Joe Taylor, who we did a scouting report, didn't we, early part of the season at Colchester. I think him and Freddie Draper, who I've seen as well in recent weeks, really like him. Bit of a throwback. He can shift as well for a big bloke, real presence. So big man, little man up front against Wickham. Didn't really work for 45 minutes or an hour. And it was actually the introduction of Rico Hackett Fairchild and Teddy Bishop that turned the game in their favour and ultimately led to them getting a point. But really interesting at any level, really, across the four leagues, seeing a team go with the two up front and going a little bit back to front early on. So I'll be really excited to see how those two do, because every time we spoke of Lincoln this season, it's been about injuries, it's been about lack of front players, lack of available front players, lack of goal threat. All of a sudden, you've got two young, hungry, very talented forwards that are going to be leading the line. And yeah, the other ingredient here is your motivation if you're a Lincoln City player is this type of game. Derby County at home, absolutely flying, big crowd at Sinsel Bank. Yeah, let's hope it's a good spectacle and that they give a good go against the Derby side that are, you know, phenomenal. What are they, 10 wins in 12, 31 points in the last 12 games? I mean, that's title winning form. So up against it, but it should be a really good clash.
Derby going up, aren't they, Clarkie? I mean, I say it with a heavy heart, but you know, it looks pretty good.
I don't know. I know that they're in good form. I know that. But I've said all along, Bolton and Posh, I've been saying it for months, that would be my top two. I never fancy Portsmouth to stay there. Well, I still don't, and even though they're there. But yeah, Derby are the ones coming with a run. But there is, I think there is a but with Derby. I do think that they're still a very old team. I think they've still got limitations in terms of the style of play. You know, it's still, it's, for me, Mendes Lang is just huge. And if anything happens to Mendes Lang for Derby, then I think they lose half of their threat. That's the issue. I just think he's been so good for them that in a way I see it as a negative, because what if something happens to him? That would be my question mark moving forwards. In this game, he's going to give them a good chance. But yeah, just looking at the goals the other day, it's still quite direct, isn't it? Flick on from Tyrese John-Jules to Mendes Lang. Beautiful crossing for Barkhuizen. The second goal, it's a ball into the box. They win the contact. They win the second header, and that goes into the back of the net. And then the third one is Conor Hourihan. You know, just a bit of quality. Yeah, that's the difference here. Derby have got so much experience, and Lincoln really, really don't have a great deal of it, do they? So that's the key difference. I think it'll be a really good game. I think it'll be a good battle, a good atmosphere. And I agree with Sam. I think that Skubala has made three good choices there. Cohen and the two, you know, recalling Draper from Walsall and bringing in Taylor on loan. I think they are three good pieces of decision-making from him, and I expect an upturn from them.
Just quickly, it'll be interesting if Lincoln set up the same, because I think Burton only had two shots on target. Derby, you would have expected to have the lion's share of possession and chances, and so it proved. But I just think they're very attack-minded, Derby, at the moment. They're set up. You think of two out-and-out wingers who don't give you loads defensively, especially Mendes Lang. John-Jules off Collins, I think it was the other day. Yeah, so you're talking about a bird and Hourihan access, and Hourihan's not going to get around loads anymore. So I think they do miss a little bit of tenacity, maybe in the middle of the pitch. So it'd be fascinating to see if Lincoln keep the two up front, if they try and really start on the front foot and attack Derby County, because I think they can be got at. And I think in the bigger games, that's something that Paul Warne will have to be aware of.
Yeah, a friend of mine who works at Arsenal, he's a big Derby County fan. He watches them every week, and he's been down most of the season in terms of what he's been watching. He hasn't really enjoyed it, but now he's sort of begrudgingly sort of doffing his cap to the manager and also to James Collins. Last time I spoke to him, he said James Collins is one of the most limited strikers I've seen lead the line for Derby. But
nobody gets written off more than James Collins, thing. I remember people saying he couldn't do it in League One about five years ago.
I know, but he keeps scoring, and he's a scrapper, he's a fighter, and he does know where the back of the net is. He's not the worst.
That was a great header the other day. Lovely goal.
It was a great header, wasn't it? So yeah, they're, I think a lot of Derby fans are eating their words at the moment, but there's a caution about them. I don't think you'll find that many Rams supporters that are saying, we're definitely going up.
All right. Elsewhere in the East Midlands, in League Two, Notts County against Stockport. Probably not going to finish 0-0 this one. The Magpies had that nuts 5-5 draw at Grimsby last weekend. They are the only team who scored more goals than Stockport in League Two, albeit Stockport, I was going to say County, they're both County. Stockport have blanked in two of their last three games. Adrian, Jim O'Brien, the midfielder and interim charge of Notts still as we record. They need to get a new manager in quickly, right? Because they're in danger of losing the momentum that they had under Luke Williams and going for back-to-back promotions.
Yeah, they had a brilliant manager in Luke Williams. They've got a philosophy in place and they're trying to fill it with someone that is of a similar mindset, someone that will apply the club strategy moving forwards. I think they'll probably dip into the National League again. I think a couple of names linked there. I think the Wealdstone manager it might be the favourite. So we'll see what happens. Whoever it is has to not ignore the defensive shortcomings. You know, you cannot get promoted with a defensive record like Notts County's. They've let in more goals than Forest Green. Notts County. Forest Green, have you seen where they are in the league? They're bottom. They won't go up. Notts County, they will not go up unless they make dramatic improvements to the defence. They conceded 5 at Grimsby, 5 at Colchester, 5 at Sutton. They let in 4 at Tranmere, Wimbledon, at home to Mansfield. You know, that's asking too much of a brilliant strike force. We know how good they are going forward. It's just asking too much. So, yeah, I fancy Stockport in this game. I think that with the sort of state of limbo that County are in, Stockport will be well fired up for it. Others breathing down their neck for the title. I think Stockport will go there and maybe expose those flaws that I've just been talking about.
A bit like what I was just saying a few minutes ago about the League One game, but just look at the Notts County side. I mean, if you were going to part with 25 quid or whatever they're charging at Meadow Lane, I mean, how's he getting Jones, Bostock, Naman, Crowley, McGoldrick, Langstaff into the same team? I mean, what are you expecting?
Well, it's because they have the ball the whole time. That's what they're thinking. It's like, we've got the ball, so let's get players on the pitch that can hurt the opposition. It's that sort of glass half full approach, I guess, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, if you put Langstaff in first and then work from there, right? 20 goals for him already this season.
Yeah, I mean, they got some brilliant forward players. I mean, this should be a great game if you were going to go to a game this weekend. Stockport have been their form's been a little bit indifferent. And I think just looking at the last couple of games, he's had to change again, Dave Challenor. We seem to have spoken about this quite often this season. They're so good when they've got Touré and Noyle, I think, and that kind of makes the mind up, doesn't it, that you play wing backs or you play those two flying down the flanks and delivering for the array of brilliant forward players that they've got the options. Madden and Powell on the bench the other day, so they've got great firepower. But Torre's at AFCON, I believe, and Noyle's had a really bad injury, a facial injury, which means he's going to be sidelined for a period, I think. So I think they had to shift and play a centre-half fullback the other day back to a back four. So it's not been plain sailing throughout, but they're still a real powerful side. And I think probably above any other game, a lovely contrast this weekend. I think Stockport are really good at what they do. They're strong. They get balls in. Good midfield players, actually. Good options. Lemon High Evans has come back from AFC Wimbledon after an impressive loan spell. So we know how good they are and we know how brilliant on the eye Notts County are. Jody Jones, what, 4 assists the other day? I think Harry Kane was the last player to do it, I think I read, for Son away at Southampton. I think that was the game. Anyway, it should be a thriller.
Yeah, good. Stockport are, just check out their away record against the best teams in the division. The hardest games in a season, away to top half sides, 1-5, drawn 1, lost 1, scored at least 2 in every single one of those games. So they won't go to Notts County and hold back. They'll go there to score goals.
Those Notts County manager favourites. Stuart Maynard, as Clarky mentions, the Wealdstone manager, is the favourite. Morten Dahm Kjærgaard, who I know Sam's a big fan of, he's the second favourite. And then tick this off your bingo card, Neil Warnock, also in the running, former Notts County manager.
Do you think he's going to implement Luke Williams'
passing style? Yeah, maybe. Right, let's finish with a quick quiz. This is about 3 players who did well last weekend. So I'm going to ask the chap some questions. Just put your hand up when you know the answer. Not great for the listener, but it allowed me to decide who got there first. Lyle Taylor scored for Cambridge on his debut last weekend after he left Wickham 7 games into his Adams Park career. But who does Lyle Taylor play his international football for? Oh, Sam, straight in there. He knows it.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. It's Montserrat.
It is indeed Montserrat.
Well played. Well played.
He's got a fine record for them too. Clarkie, was that on the tip of your tongue?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It just reminded me of, I was watching the telly. What's that Ant and Dec program? The Unlimited thing. Did you see it the weekend? They won over £1 million, a couple. Wow. And the question that took him there, he just said, I know it. Like what was the year that Blur's Country House album, Country House came out or something like that?
I'll get that as well.
Yeah, go on.
95?
Yeah, exactly. I knew it as well. Like he said, if you know, you know. And Sam knew.
All right, let's see if you know this one then. Jake Livermore got a brace for Watford at QPR. It was only the second time in the 34-year-old's career that he'd scored more than once in a game. Who did he score his first brace against? So it was when he was at Hull. And it was in 2016. If you know this, I'll give you £1 million. Oh, Sam's got his finger up. Go on then.
You've got to have a go, haven't you?
Yeah.
I think you might have put it in because it's Forrest. Forrest.
Absolutely not. Oh. Adrian?
Norwich.
Not bad guesses, but not right. Rotherham. I mean, that's a really difficult question.
Tough question.
I mean, it's pretty much impossible. It's basically one of 92, isn't it?
Or yeah, I mean, 70. I don't know if you've ever tried to devise a quiz question based on Jake Livermore's career, but it's there's not loads to go.
Right, come on, let's get the equaliser. Come on.
We've got to get this to call it a draw. Final question. Callum O'Hare was the match winner for Coventry in their win against Leicester. From whom did Coventry sign him? Oh, that was definitely Adrian.
Oh. Do you know what? Now I'm doubting myself. I think it was Villa.
It was Villa.
Yes. Right.
Would you have got that, Sam?
I would have got that.
Yeah. He's a massive Villa fan, isn't he? I mean, he's a bit... I love him. I love watching Callum O'Hare. Great goals at the weekend. But he is a Grealish wannabe, isn't he? He's trying to copy him a little bit, isn't he? But fair play. Well,
let's see if he has a massive Chinese and loads of drink after he next puts in a match-winning performance, and then we'll know for sure. All right, that is going to just about do us for today. Let me remind you before we go, though, that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign-up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at EFL What The, or on TikTok and Instagram at What The EFL. If you'd like to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, that will help other EFL fans find the show, and we would greatly appreciate it as well. My thanks go to Sam, to Adrian, and to Jamie for joining us earlier as well. Really good to hear a bit more about Reading's diet situation. We're keeping our fingers crossed for you guys. We'll be back again next week with another show. Until then, bye for now.